My reflection today is named Born Catholic. Yes, I was born Catholic. As a young boy growing up, I knew nothing of other religions. Because I was being raised in the Catholic traditions, there was First Communion, altar boy, Christmas, Midnight Mass, and Easter. And I can't leave out the Stations of the Cross. In case you didn't know what this is, a priest would stop and light incense at each station of Christ's death march. And last but not least, there was confession. I know you probably heard of that. A door would slide open and a priest would talk to you through a screen. Probably seen it in the movies. I have. You would bare your soul to him. The guilt for me would sometimes be unbearable, especially as a young child. Fortunately, the penance would only be 3 or 4 Hail Marys. But the guilt of confessing sins was really hard on me as a young boy growing up. Most of these so-called sins weren't really sins in my mind. As I got older and into my teenage years, I started to rebel against this religion of guilt. I would only go to Midnight Mass on Christmas every year to make my mom happy. I began to realize how much I liked nature. I was becoming a pagan without even knowing it. So I was without any real religion until a friend of mine started telling me about Unitarian Universalism. I became very interested. I got out a phone book and found Star King. My first time here was Mark Bellatini's 15th anniversary. The love that flowed out of this church was overwhelming. That was in 1996. Soon after that, I met Ruth here. We got engaged here. Katie married us here. We even had a hand fasting ritual in our wedding. That's when they tie a knot and you tie the hands together. None of our Catholic relatives that were there knew it was a pagan ritual. They all really liked it. They said, "What was that? That was really cool." Ruth and I had a pagan circle here for 5 years. Star King has given me the freedom to believe what feels right in my soul to believe. I also love the way the children are taught without guilt. Ruth and I have no children, but we've been teachers in RE since we've been here together. Thank you, Star King, for letting me be the person I want to be and allow me to follow my dreams. Blessed be.
We UUs often get a bad rep in the marketplace of religious identities. We are seen as hybrids, wanderers through a spiritual farmer's marketplace, picking up a little Buddhist meditation, tasting on occasion some Christian contemplative prayer, or twirling through a Sufi dance. Even our very own Reverend Scotty McLennan, director of religious life at Stanford and author of the book Finding Your Religion, argues that we should either reclaim the religion of our youth or delve deeply into a single path. And Bill very poignantly talked about how the religion of his youth betrayed his fundamental sense of love and connection with nature until he found us in Star King. Reverend Scotty offers us the analogy of trekking to the mountaintop through well-worn trails. That's his ideal for spiritual development. Or bushwhacking across backcountry, never reaching the peak. He retells in his book the story of Donna, who grew up Presbyterian in L.A. Donna, in turn, explored Buddhist, Quaker, Episcopalian, and finally the Catholic religion, where she fundamentally, primarily settled. During her adulthood, and this was often a response to stressful life events such as breakups and relationship. To Scotty, such a pick and choose approach limits our capacity to grow spiritually. An eclectic spirituality that combines meditation from one tradition with nature appreciation from another and social activism from a third is somehow to him impure and thwarts our progress along the path of faith development. But I would like to reclaim the virtue of the eclectic. The word eclectic derives from the Greek eklektikos, literally meaning gathered out or picked up. Eclecticism has a regal history. In ancient times, philosophers and orders such as Cicero tried to combine the best of the Stoics, the Aristotelians, and the Platonists to cobble together a philosophy that worked for individuals and their communities in the cosmopolitan Roman society. More recently, we're all familiar with eclectic interior design. You know, a room could mix French Provençal chairs covered in damask silk with some kind of minimalist lighting and arts and crafts cupboards. This could all fit together without being too busy, as long as you had harmony of color and form. Now, I'm a confirmed eclectic, and I would no more seek purity of religion than purity of race, a concept that's a total anathema to me. In order for you to better understand where I'm coming from, I should recount to you a little bit of my own spiritual journey. I was raised Baptist. Well, not exactly raised, but more like immersed in Sunday school, exposed to long and tedious sermons. Hopefully I won't replicate that here. Add to the transformative experience of being dunked in a pool when I was 13. My identity was complex. I was African American, but we had integrated an all-white neighborhood in Erie, Pennsylvania, and we were the first black family to join this Northern Baptist church. At first, the senior pastor was very liberal. He was active in the civil rights movement and sought my family out to integrate his church. But later, after he retired, the congregation settled a very conservative Calvinist minister, one who condemned many of us to hell for our actions and beliefs. This was the 60s, the era of civil rights and Vietnam War protests, and I was the only kid in my middle school that was anti-war in my attitudes and beliefs. Soon I left this Baptist church on pacifist grounds and due to the moral rigidity of the pastor. I sought out others in my city that were also against the war. I actually found a UU fellowship in Erie. These marvelously committed and friendly folk were the only like-minded souls who also opposed the war, along with their elaborate intellectual and political discussions. I had no idea as a teenager that they comprised a religious community as well. To me, it was sort of a forum-like intellectual and political consciousness-raising group. I also sought solace in nature and avidly read, like many here today, I would imagine, Thoreau's, Walden, and Emerson's essays. I'd lie for hours under my favorite oak next to a stream, imagining a kind of pantheist unity, pulling together my tree, the creek I was lying next to, the rushes coming up from the soil, and the warblers chirping away in the background. I must tell you that my mom's Southern religious ancestry was a blend of Congregationalist pastors and African-American root doctors. My great-great-great-grandmother, Cherry Thrash, was a root doctor in Georgia in the early 1800s who learned her skills from the local Creek Native Americans living in northern Georgia. My great-grandfather was a Congregationalist pastor who toyed with Universalism and wrote African-American poetry and dialect, and actually wrote a poem about his grandmother's herbal cures. Later in college, I traveled a couple of times to Haiti to learn about Haitian art and the voodoo religion. Hearing the drums resound throughout Port-au-Prince under a full moon left me feeling this peculiar sense of ancestral familiarity. So as Scotty might term it, my formative religious experience was a blend of Hoodoo, pantheist, Baptist, and Congregationalist religions. But the life of the Spirit didn't really stop there. In college, my pacifism led to yoga, particularly of the Jain type. Now, the Jains are members of South Asian religion who live out their value of what they term ahimsa, or non-harmfulness. They're the ones whose monks don a cloth over their mouth so they don't harm insects through inhaling. Now, there was an ex-monk, Chichrabanu, who came to Cornell, who, having left his celibate life in Mumbai, came to the United States to spread pacifism, vegetarianism, Jain atheism, and meditation around the globe. I was like totally instantly drawn to the nonviolence of Jainism on account of my opposition to the war, but I failed really dismally at being a vegetarian. Lasted only a couple of weeks. So there again, there's even guilt in an atheist Jain religion. Now, my mentor, Chichrabanu, had this wonderfully peaceful air about him. In contrast to the other gurus of the 60s and 70s, he was genuinely humble and even a bit shy. And boy, did he ever teach this absorbing mode of meditation. After not seeing him or being in contact with him for about 35 years, I looked him up in New York City, when I took my daughter Erica to college back east. Same amazing sage and the same sagely advice. It was as though we'd seen each other the week before. Now, after college, I went to Stanford to medical school, became a psychiatrist, and a devotee of the religion of psychotherapy. Psychology furnished both an ideology, model of the human mind, and a theory of human error, or as we might term it in our parlance, unconscious conflict. This time, I truly was a quirky hybrid between my kind of devotional pantheism, where the world I felt was ensouled with vivid and moving spirits, and an ethically committed, kind of nonviolent atheistic viewpoint with a practice that included yoga, meditation, and talk therapy. Thus, my path to this knowledge has been a long and winding one, starting from my immersion into yoga in college and continuing into psychotherapy in adulthood. Now, the yogic practice was very helpful to combat the stress of trying to go up the professional scale of tenure and writing papers and so on. In fact, the primary description of yoga in the Yoga Sutras is that yoga is the stopping of whirling thoughts. And boy, my thoughts were whirling, and, you know, when I was in my 30s. But Yoga in its ecumenical breath offered little in the way, I felt, of spiritual depth. This insight really hit me a decade ago. I had traveled to Turkey to do some research, genetic and archaeological research. My colleague on the ground, Serdar, was a cultural Kurd, but he hadn't been to a mosque in a decade. And he graciously took me on a tour of the mountainous backcountry of southwest Turkey to explore Roman and what they call Cilician ruins. We had been traveling all day. It was hot, dusty, and approaching dusk, after being exhausted by our constant trekking through the backcountry, we settled upon a remote herding village that contained some marvelous Roman ruins. A 10-year-old shepherd kid led us to an early Byzantine church that had fragments of biblical frescoes still visible upon its fading walls. The village was Muslim. In fact, the imam showed us that the local mosque that had been recently constructed using stones from a Greco-Roman pagan temple. The base of the foundation of the mosque still had in Greek the inscription of the 12 Olympian gods, Zeus, Athena, Apollo, and so on. At that moment, I felt a profound sense of connection with the history and with the peoples of all faiths, pagan, Christian, Muslim, who had been in that ground and honored and tilled the land for 3,000 years. The shepherd's family extended to us an invitation to dine with them because it had gotten dark by then and hosted us overnight at no cost. The dinner table was glorious in its warmth and in the hospitable love offered by the family. Even though everyone in Turkey was saddened by the American-led war in Iraq and felt that Americans considered Muslims to be their enemies, this peasant family knew the interfaith wisdom of the soil. And as our quote from Ramakrishna asserts, many are the names of God, and infinite are her forms and ways of approaching God. Later, after going to seminary, on account of this transformative event in Turkey, I would rediscover Unitarian Universalism. Our denomination furnished me a home in an eclectically decorated house where my odd soup of yoga, African traditional religion, and psychology could find acceptance as a hybrid spiritual path in the street market of religious ideas. Let us sport in the in-between places, delighting in the hybrid, bushwhacking across that glorious mountain we call the divine.